patreon.com/thewalkoffpodcast. $4 a month gets you in there.
Baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard podcast for the casual fan.
And another one. My goodness.
Good day, walk-off community. I'm Scott Belford, and we're doing a quick little intro to start this interview with Taylor Cicedo, just to kind of set up what has happened over the last 2 months for the guy. So we sat down with him middle of January. Of course, he was in the Blue Jays bullpen in 2021, made his major league debut with the Blue Jays, looked like he was going to be a big contributing member to that pen in 2022, and then just couldn't stay healthy. The Blue Jays wound up DFAing him at the end of the season, and then the next day, literally within 24 hours, the New York Mets picked him up. So we sat down and talked to him about this experience. Of course, about a week after talking to him, he was DFA'd by the Mets and then picked up by his hometown, the Seattle Mariners, which is very cool. So a big congrats to him. So just so everyone is aware, yes, we know that Taylor Cicedo is now a Seattle Mariner, but we figured we'd still air this interview because he had so many good things to say. All right, everybody, enjoy the interview. Cheers.
So thrilled to have back on the show, pitcher for the New York Mets, but you all know him from his days with the Blue Jays, Taylor Cicedo. Welcome back to the walk-off, man. Thanks for taking the time.
Always a great time talking to you guys. Appreciate it.
Hey, we're looking forward to catching up with you here. It's been too long to start with. I know it's been a 12-month period of ups and downs for you, but let's start with a congratulations, man. You're healthy and you're ready to get back out on the mound. That's big.
Absolutely. Thank you. I appreciate that. You know, it was a stressful year, but we're good to go now.
We're good to go now. So let's start with that, basically. After 7 years in this Blue Jays organization, you were released and then immediately picked up by the Mets. That must have been a bit of a roller coaster of emotion, right? Like, obviously, you know, this is a business and stuff like this happens, but half a decade with an organization, that must have been tough news at first.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of going into the offseason, I kind of figured it was coming, you know, just I kind of realized the direction that they were going to go and kind of probably reshape some things. And, you know, kind of being that fringe guy on that 40 man, I kind of just figured that that was where that was going to be. But I didn't expect, honestly, to be picked up so fast, especially with the numbers that I had and, you know, not pitching for majority of the year in the big leagues.
Yeah.
You know, I really didn't see that. And so kind of sitting there like, when is this going to happen? You know, like, when am I going to get the call? And then I eventually got the call from Ross and just saying like, hey, you know, we put you on waivers and you were actually claimed by the Mets. And I really didn't see that coming. So that was kind of like, oh, okay, that's a nice surprise. That's
okay. Well, the Mets are good, right? You ended up with a good organization. That's got to feel good.
I mean, it's definitely awesome to be a part of them, and like, especially what the expectations they'll have this year. And, you know, it's kind of in the same boat that the Blue Jays were last year. You know, coming into it, they're like the power ranking number two team, you know, project high expectations going into it. And, you know, it feels like I'm on that same boat again, you know, and it's going to be an interesting and fun year, that's for sure.
And I don't know if this is a sore spot or not, but you touched on it a little bit there. The DFA process, like, did they get a hold of you before this happened, or you just saw your name in a tweet and?
No, I had no idea until the phone call. You know, it was pretty early in the morning. And I saw Ross pop up and I'm like, well, there it is. And actually pretty funny. I missed the phone call. And so then I called him back right away and he texted me back. He's like, I have to hop into some meetings. I'll call you back when they're done. So I had to sit there for like an hour, like being like, oh, man, how am I getting canned? You know, like, how is this?
Yeah.
And then call me back. And the phone call was relatively quick, you know, and I just said like, yeah, you know, I claimed you. And, you know, best of luck. You know, if our paths ever cross again, would love for that to happen. And kind of thing. And I was like, yeah, just, you know, thanks for everything. And that was pretty much it.
So how did that process go then? Did you go right to Syracuse after that, or?
No, that was in October, November, maybe. I can't.
Right. Remember. It was the end of the season, right? Yeah, yeah, that's right.
It was the end of the season. And yeah, so then it was pretty, it was right when they needed to finalize the rosters for the Rule 5. So yeah, like I said, I just kind of felt it, you know, one of those things, you know, the intuition kind of just was like, it wasn't anything where like I felt like I should stay or anything. Like it was just, I just wasn't able to perform, and you know, the Blue Jays felt that they have better talent, and they got a lot of talent coming up regardless, you know, a lot of things to be happy about. And I have no, you know, ill will towards them or anything. It's just unfortunate business side of it, you know. And you know, obviously it's a change. You spend 8 seasons with them and they're the only thing I know, the only org I know, but you know, and there's nothing wrong with the new beginnings and see what happens with the Mets.
Absolutely, man. Turn the page and move forward. Did you have any of your new teammates reach out at all from the Mets organization?
Just some staff members.
Yeah.
I don't know a lot of people over there, if any at all. I got to kind of hang out with like Sean Reed Foley a little bit when he was with the Blue Jays. But other than that, I don't know many people over there.
You didn't add Carlos Correa and then unfollow him?
Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, it's actually a funny story on that is when I got claimed by them, I was talking to my agent. He was like, yeah, you know, like this is before everything got crazy. He was like, honestly, like they just gave, Diaz like 100 mil. So it's like, I don't know how much more money they're going to be spending, you know? And so he's like, I think we should be in a good spot. And then like 2 weeks later, here's 100 million, 200 million, you know, it was just like, yeah. Well, there goes that, you know? And so it's been crazy.
Wild.
Yeah. Have they discussed with you at all their plans with you for 2023, or are you nervous about spring training? Are you kind of feeling a little bit like, you know, were you ever the kid to go to the new school?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I really feel like the new kid at school. That's the perfect way to describe it. I wouldn't say, I mean, nothing has changed other than the jersey that I'm wearing, you know?
Like, yeah.
You know, I'll always continue to fight for a spot. And, you know, I believe in my talents and I believe that they will take care of itself. I just do the right things. And, you know, I mean, the things that they said, they want me to compete for an opening day spot right out the gate. That's why they got me. They're like, we don't really carry a lot of lefties to begin with and organizationally. So they're like, you know, there's a reason why we went out and got you. And so, you know, that kind of, you know, makes you feel good in a sense, you know.
Mm-hmm. Another similarity with the Jays, eh?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's all the same, you know, just different jerseys. But
what are you most excited about joining that Mets organization? Because you mentioned his name. It is pretty darn cool that you'll have somewhat regular access to the best closer in baseball and Edwin Diaz.
You got Verlander, you got Scherzer, you know, you got all these, you know, guys that like coming up and like watching and seeing these guys. I'm like, man, now I can call them teammates, you know, like it's a pretty crazy feeling. You know, and I'm super excited just to see what they have. I've heard great things about their org. So, you know, and it seems like they're fully invested in, like, no matter what it takes, that we're going to try and bring a World Series here. So I'm whatever role I play, I'm excited.
Yeah, you could call it that, eh? Fully invested. I think that's a safe way of putting it.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, well, Taylor, let's talk your time in Toronto a little bit here. I know I sent you these questions in advance just so you had a little bit of time to let them percolate in the brain there. But let's start with, what were a couple of your favorite or most memorable moments in Toronto?
I would say probably my year in Double A when we won the championship, whatever, over there.
Right.
Strictly because that, I mean, being on that team, that was – an incredible team. I don't know, like, I don't follow many other orgs closely, but I don't know, like, many had that many big leaguers on one minor league team. You know, I mean, you had, even from the beginning, like, guys like, just sort of name them, like Sean Reed Foley. You had Lourdes Gurriel that got called up from AA that year.
Yeah.
You had John Birdie, who's an everyday starting second baseman. You had TJ Zoic, Romano, he was a starter.
Yeah.
You know, Jonathan Davis, all these guys. I mean, you can just Vladdy, Bo.
Yeah.
Just keep going. And it's just like, it's Kirby Snead, you know, all these guys.
Yeah.
How did you have that much talent on one team? And it wasn't a surprise why we just like blew through that. Even the manager, John Snyder. I mean,
yeah.
So everybody was a big leaguer on that team. So it was just like being a part of that and like seeing how, like, before, like, how great everybody was going to be before they got to the big leagues was pretty cool.
It's kind of wild to think about that, eh? That 2018 Fisher Cats championship, I'm sure no one had any idea that you're like, oh, we're all going to see time in the majors, right? That doesn't happen.
They always talk about it. Like, they're like, you know, like one or two of you will probably, you know, make your dreams come true, go to the big leagues. I mean, like, I don't know, like 18, 20 of them made it to the big leagues. it's nuts. And so, like, being a part of that and then now seeing what those guys are all doing on the big stage, it's like pretty incredible, you know? And so, like, I really cherish that time. And I would say, like, another was probably coming back from COVID, just because I've never really been a part of a team like so close. Like, Fisher Cats, we were close, but like everybody was just good. So just like everything kind of just breezed through. But like going into that season after COVID, you know, we had to play in Trenton, you know, like the odds weren't there. Like everything could unravel. You had a lot of like older guys too. There was a lot of older guys that wanted to get back to the big leagues, but it was never any of that. It was just like, hey, like, let's have fun. I don't know if it was because like we've been all locked up and so we're just happy to be back.
Right.
But it was like genuine, like, happiness for everybody, like for when everybody got called up or for anybody who made their debut. It was like general, like, yes, like, dude, I'm super happy for you. And it was a great time to be a part of that team. And even then, like, you talk about big leaguers, you look at that bullpen, I mean, a lot of guys from that bullpen are also now in the big leagues. And so it was really fun. So I'm really glad to have those memories.
It's kind of funny too. And I know another one that meant a lot to you too was, and you're wearing your Seahawks jersey there, Seattle boy. But I know I was in the stands when you pitched in Seattle for the first time. And it was so cool to see your group of friends all wearing Sesedo jerseys. And it was so funny because my wife's like, they've got to know them. Who has 18 Sesedo jerseys? Right? And I'm like,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, that was that's definitely probably it's up there for sure, because you know, being hometown, I had season tickets. My parents shared season tickets right behind the visitors dugout, so I always sat on that side, like one row back. And so I always sat there sitting on that side. And then, you know, flash forward to many years later, and you look over and, you know, they're all sitting right there. And that's like, wow,
that's pretty cool.
And then to do it with the team that like drafted you and believed in you, and mm-hmm. you know, that was, it's all special, you know. You can't pick one thing. That's like, you know, but that's definitely top three for sure.
Okay, so the next one is, who in this Jays organization do you feel you've made lifelong connections with? Are there guys that you're going to go out of your way to maintain the relationship with?
Yeah, I mean, I think for sure, like guys I mentioned, like Romano, I had a good relationship with, you know, Santiago Espinal as well. That's another one. You know, I was pretty close with Bo for a little bit, you know, and so it's mm-hmm. just like those guys I'll definitely continue to reach out to and things like that, you know, because when you come up together, you share a different kind of bond, you know, but
of course,
those guys are great. So yeah, I'll definitely be reaching out to those guys.
You still in touch with Kirby at all?
Yeah, we talk every day. And,
oh, nice. Okay.
That one goes without saying.
and Toronto's favorite, Brian Baker. So.
Right. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Boy, he he turned heel pretty quick there, eh? Just yeah. One mishap and everyone's like, I don't care how long he was here.
Yeah, that's just who Baker is, you know? He's just a fiery
guy. Yeah, so. Just a fiery guy, exactly. What was your biggest lesson learned while wearing a Jays uni?
I would say patience and maturity. Because I kind of came into the Blue Jays like unpolished in a sense. Like I didn't really have a college experience per se, in a sense where like I quit baseball for a while and then went to an NAIA and then ended up getting drafted by the Blue Jays. So like I was kind of just like still fresh off of like high school pretty much, you know, in a sense, because I just didn't spend a lot of time in a college other than playing baseball. And I just had a lot of growing up to do. And I really thank the Blue Jays for all of that and being patient in that sense. You know, I can turn back to a time when I was in Lansing, when Schneider was also a coach there. And it was a really big turning point, I think, for me and for my career in general was, it's pretty funny to talk about, but when I was, we were pitching somewhere in Iowa, I forgot exactly, but we had our pitching coordinator there, Sal Fasano, and everybody was there. So I felt like I had to do, you know, more than I needed to do. And I was out by the first inning and I sat at the end of the bench and never moved and basically just pouted about it, you know, and, you know, doing the whole thing, like, I want to quit, I hate baseball kind of thing, you know. And we ended up losing, like, I think it was like 18-2. It was bad. And I got called in. I was sitting in my locker. Schneider came over. And, like, up to this point, me and Schneider had a really good relationship. Like, he let me be me and, like, never really said anything. You know, he's a player's coach. He's like, that's who he is. And he kind of pulled me in that day. Like, I want you to come in here. And, you know, Jeff Ware, the pitching coach, and Schneider and Sal Fasano sat down there and they were just like, we can't have this anymore. You know, like, if you continue to do this, like, we're going to have to let you go, like, whatever. Like, you know, you're one of my favorite guys, but, like, it's extremely toxic in that. And the next day, I apologized to the team and, you know, and Romano was talking to me and he was like, man, you were being an absolute baby yesterday. I was like, yeah, you know, that was bad. And that day was something that the Blue Jays kind of always, you know, held to me in the sense that, like, that was the day that I really changed and really realized that I'm like, I wasn't a professional. And I'm like, if I want to continue to do this, like, I need to change how I'm going to act on the mound and go about it in a more professional way. And so just the maturity and patience and understanding is what I learned from them.
That's a great story about just understanding about kind of holding yourself accountable, right? Like, yeah, that's absolutely. So funny. Romano's like, man, you were a baby.
Yeah, he does. That's one thing about Romano is he does not mince words at all. He'll tell you exactly. He's like, man, right to my face, like when I'm most vulnerable, you know, like just apologize. He's like, man, you had like a baby yesterday. I'm like, all right, man, I'm already down. Like, all right.
Stop kicking me. Yeah. All right. Favorite thing about Toronto as a city?
I can't pick one thing. I love the city. I don't know what it is about it. You know, obviously I've met my girlfriend there as well. Mm-hmm. So probably that, I would say.
There you go. Good answer.
That's the safe answer. Yes. Well done.
Yeah. I really did, like, out of all the stadiums that I did play at while I was up with them, like, there was nothing that really, like, was special or hit like Toronto did. Every time I was there, it just felt right, felt like home, and it just had this like vibration towards it that I just drew to. I can't really explain why. Maybe it was just because I was in the big leagues with the Toronto Blue Jays. Maybe that's what it mm-hmm. was. But I every time I stepped into that stadium, it was a different feeling, you know. Like every time I went to that bullpen, it was goosebumps. And so, like, I just think as a whole, I just have, you know, a special place for it. Like, I can't pick one thing. It's just a beautiful city in general. Like, it's just, I can't name one specific thing that I really liked about it.
Well, I can speak for the rest of the Jays fans anyways, but like, we are going to miss you, man. It was great seeing you there. Your story is so awesome. And just like the determination and just outright not going to quit in you is awesome to see. So all the best with the Mets and stuff like that, man. We are rooting for you.
Big time.
Well, I appreciate that, guys. Thank you.
Where are you at right now in your pitching regimen? Are you throwing regularly, just getting your arm back into things, or what are you doing?
Yeah, I've thrown a couple of bullpens now. So we're just kind of fully like getting to that point where it's starting to like really ramp up now. Haven't thrown any.
When do you head to Florida? Are you heading there in a couple of weeks, or what's your plan?
I'm heading there on the 13th in February.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Yeah. So when everybody else probably reports, but.
Boy, really saving you from that Valentine's Day dinner, eh?
Yeah, exactly.
But what's your pitching repertoire looking like this year? Did you tweak anything, change a grip, add a pitch, anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, right now is like I'm kind of focusing on a new sinker grip a little bit, kind of tweaking it around, just because like I felt it was one of my best pitches, but it was also kind of putting me in a bind a little bit, kind of handcuffed me a little bit. It wasn't something that I felt I could throw for a consistent strike, you know? And like, obviously I'm getting the chases when I'm in the minor leagues, you know, but when you get to the big leagues, it's a different ball game. They have a different eye and they're a lot more fine with what they want to pick and swing at. So, I just think like finding something that I can control with like the same movement, is something that I've been working on. Other than that, I feel really good about the repertoire that I have and the pitches that I have. Something that I was working on was just when I was trying to get back was using the four seam and two seam a little bit more, like forcing up in the zone, sinker, you know, kind of thing. And I think that was working really well for me up until the point where I got shut down again. So, but, you know, I just try and pick up where I left off.
I'm really curious on your thoughts on, so you're probably one of the best guys we can ask about this because you are a dude, like you said at the beginning, right? You're on the fringe a little bit. You are going to see some big league time this year. I have no doubt. You're probably also going to be yo-yoed up and down a little bit.
Yep.
It was just mentioned or just confirmed that robo umps are going to be a part of every AAA game.
I just saw that.
What is that going to be like as a pitcher who has to, number one, get used to hitting the zone with where the robot ump is calling it a strike, but then going to the big leagues and then also once again dealing with the human aspect? Because I can imagine it's going to be a little weird.
Yeah. I mean, it's obviously going to take some adjustments because you're going to go from the minor leagues where like the robo umps tell you that you hit the zone and you know, that's a strike. And then when you go up to the big leagues and then you get that same pitch and the dump's like, no, it's a ball, you know, and you're going to be like, well, wait a minute. You know, the robo ump said that was a strike just a week ago. And now today you're telling me it's a ball. So, I mean,
you're saying you're better than a robot.
Yeah, we're smarter than AI. Come on now.
Come on. the chirps could get interesting.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting. It's something that I have not dealt with before. So it's pretty unknown to me. But what I've heard from guys that have used it, and pitched with it, they said that you might not notice really other than like the crazy calls where like, you know, you have a catcher reach for something in it, but it crosses the zone and that's a strike. But other than that, they're relatively quick. It's something that you hardly will notice. It's everything will kind of still feel the same. So I don't know. I was an advocate about keeping the game, the human element of the game. I'm, you know, that you take away from all of that fun of like, you know, that was a strike. Nobody tells you, no, that was a ball. You know,
yeah.
I have a computer telling me, and now how can I argue with the computer, you know? So
do you think that this is going to affect pitch framing? Like, it's been such a big deal when it comes to a catcher's development, right? Is being able to steal those strikes every once in a while. Is that going to become an irrelevant part of the game?
I hope not. I really hope not. You know, like, I again, like, it's something that I have no idea, you know? I mean, I hope that catchers still focus on that, you know, no matter what. And because you never know what that could lead to. You know, 1 week we could say that, hey, this doesn't work, and so then now it would put catchers in a bind and be like, well, I don't know how to frame that well. You know, it's just like, you know, hopefully that's something that they continue, and I'm sure they will. You know, again, they're professionals, they'll know, and so I hopefully we don't have to worry about that anytime soon.
Well,
agreed.
This is kind of unrelated, but I promise it circles back. Just, I think yesterday or the day before, I'm not sure when this interview is going to come out, but in early January, there was like a weird corrupted file that like grounded all air traffic across the United States.
Yeah.
We can't let ourselves get into a situation where baseball is just like, oh, the robo umps froze. We got to reboot the computer here. In the meantime, like, umps are still going to have to learn how to call a strike, right?
So now, basically what you're saying is now we had rain delays, we have all these delays, now we're going to have, you know, AI delays.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's right. The umpire's rendering, guys.
Yeah, but
Buffering. Yeah. Here's a strike!
I mean, I don't know. I hope that there's still some sort of human element when it goes down, you know, and I hope that we're still teaching the game is the same way that we've all played and watched, you know, but I don't know. I think we're spending too much time trying to speed up this game. And when the game was liked because of the pace, you know, and I know today we're in today's society, we have everything at nanoseconds on our phone and we can get everything right here, and that's what we're used to, speed and everything. But I mean, for me, like when I grew up as a kid, like I would love going and spending 3 hours at a ballpark. You know, you got the smells, you got everything, you got the crowd, that white noise of the crowd, you know, and it's just like spending time there and disconnecting from everything else was always special. So like, I don't know why we're trying to speed up the game. I understand it from a perspective of like, you know, we got to kind of start making sure that we display it to a younger crowd, because, you know, like that's where that revenue is going to come in from. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Like it sucks seeing the way that it is, but
It seems like every time MLB gets their fingers in there and starts messing with things too, the next year they just released the time and the game was still longer than the year before. And you're like, what is happening?
I will say when I was down in Buffalo, that the pitch clock did speed the game.
The pitch clock works, eh?
But then there was days where like, man, we're only in the third inning. Like there are some times where it felt longer, you know, especially when you have like rehab guys come down, they turn the pitch clock off. And then you got guys up there like trying to make pitches and, you know, they're walking three or four guys because they're worried about the pitch clock and they're trying to speed everything up. And then we make a pitching change. And then that guy's struggling, and then you're like, oh my goodness. Like, so like, I mean, it's a double-edged sword in a sense, you know, like you're going to have games where if everything is right, it's going to fly. Like it's 2 hours, 2 hours and 30, like it's going to go quick. And everybody's going to be like, that was awesome. You know? And and then you're going to get those games and being like, okay. Like,
but the thing is you're never going to be able to get rid of those games. They're just going to be a part of the season.
That's what I'm saying. You accept baseball for what it is. You know, nobody complains about golf being long. Like everybody can sit there and watch golf for 4 or 5 hours.
But
the moment that baseball takes 3 hours, where you like speed the game.
This is a problem. Yeah.
So all right. I don't know.
Here's my solution. This is a poorly thought out idea that's just come to me. Instead of investing in robo umps and AI like that, we just get better with our AI investment, trimming the live game down after the fact. Like I love watching Jays in 30 on Sportsnet. It doesn't come out until the next morning though. If we could have like the first, like just leave baseball as it is. And then in the sixth inning, we get AI to just trim, you know, all the balls in play and all the outs. And then you can just join the game 2 hours into it. Watch the like first 20 minutes that way, and then you just join in the seventh inning live.
It syncs up when it's finally live. Yeah,
right. There we go.
Problem solved. Idea. It's not a bad idea.
You talk to Mr. Cohen about that, okay? He's got some money to spend.
Yeah, you put in the word.
Got it.
All right.
All right, Taylor, I'm really interested on your thoughts on Josh Naylor's home run celebration. And I'm aware you're a guy, you've mentioned this. You're all about fun and celebration and people celebrating their victories. But if you were on the mound and gave up a dinger to him, would you be cool with him pretending to rock you like a small child and calling you his son as he rounds the bases? That's a big no.
No, I think that again, all for the celebrations. You want to pump, you want to get your team going, you want to pump them up, you want to get your fans going, all for it. You know, you want to do whatever you want to do around the bases, but rocking the baby and like saying that I own you, you know, it's pretty ridiculous. And just correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm not sure if he got one hit after that and they lost the series after that. Like that's,
yeah,
that's pretty embarrassing. You know, like that's great. You got me one time, but you know, what happened for the rest of the series, you know, and I wouldn't take too kindly to it. You know, I'm all for the celebration. I'm all for making the game fun. I'm all for, you know, it's the same way that why we love the NFL, the celebrations, the first ones, the dances. This is why we watch the game, you know, but that was a little, you know, it's just a little too much.
Have you ever taken at any point in your career, and you don't need to say when, have you at any point in your career taken justice into your own hands? If someone has ever done something like that to you and plunked a guy?
No, not in Pro Bowl. I was on the end of when we were in Lansing, of a little scuffle. I gave up this guy's like third homer of the day, and we were losing like, I think like 14-3 or something. It was ridiculous. And it was like the eighth inning, and he like pimped it. And I had no idea that he did. I was just like, oh, I was watching. I'm like, that was launched. Like, good for you. And I had no idea that the guy was on his third homer, but, and he like rounded the bases, and I'm like looking towards center field, and all of a sudden I just see guys running in, and I'm like, what's going on? And yeah, there was a big old scuffle there, but I had no idea. That was the only time. And like, I obviously afterwards didn't take too kindly to it, but we never saw them again. They, you know, told us to just like be professional about it, is what it is, we'll move on from it. But there was before professional baseball, where we were in select ball, and coach, we had problems with this team, you know, and one of these guys is actually, it was the same team that Blake Snell was on at the time, because we were from the same, but it wasn't him, it was somebody else. And the coach said, I want you to throw at him, but he goes, I don't want you to hit him in his back, I want you to hit him in the ankle. I'm like, in the ankle? what is that? Like, why? He goes, that's just where it's going to hurt the most. And I'm like, I was like, that's a wild, you know, that's a wild ask right there. But
yeah.
I did. I hit him in the ankle.
You're like, and I did. I did. I
got him in the ankle. And I wasn't throwing very hard, but I was like, back then, I was probably throwing like 82, 83, but.
Still, 82 or 83 off the ankle. That's going to sting.
I'd say those are the only times that I probably have ever retaliated to somebody out there.
Okay, so we do have some listener questions for you, my dude. I've got one last kind of fun one to do here for you, and we'll throw to Adam, and he's got a couple for you. So I'm going to name some things. You rank it between one being you don't like that thing at all, 10 being you absolutely love that thing. I know this is a very difficult scoring scale to get used to, but I think you've got it here. So you ready for this?
Yeah.
Okay.
Or 1 to 10, right? Correct?
1 to 10. 10 being great, 1 being horrible.
Got it.
Mac and cheese.
8.
Okay. Yeah. So you're a fan.
I'm a fan of mac and cheese.
Yes.
But if you put ketchup on your mac and cheese, it's a -8. I'm not a fan of ketchup and mac and cheese. People who do that.
I agree 100%. Yeah. I feel like ketchup is a very specific condiment, and I know there's a lot of people who disagree with it, but like, I need it for my grilled cheese, Like, yep. I need it for my grilled cheese.
I'm not a ketchup on grilled cheese.
You're not a ketchup on grilled cheese. Are you a no dipper when it comes to grilled cheese?
Yep.
You're a dry guy?
Occasionally, I will have it with tomato soup.
Okay.
So is that, I mean, I guess
that counts.
Kind of. Ketchup?
It doesn't count, Adam. Shut
yeah, it
up.
Counts. Come on, tomato soup. That's tomato the sophisticated soup. Ketchup dip for yeah. That counts. I'm counting it.
Okay. All right. Next thing, the Marvel Universe.
10.
Okay, we got a Marvel fan. That's awesome. Yeah. Which what's
right here? Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
So for those of you on audio, he's showing us all of his top end comic books here.
Yeah. So 10 for me.
Favorite movie from that, or you can go ahead and name a couple here, obviously.
From the Marvel Universe?
Yeah.
Oh man, I'm pretty biased. I like all of them. I would say probably Avengers, Infinity War, and Endgame, just because of like.
Yeah, it was the culmination of everything they were doing. Yeah,
the whole build up to that point. I really liked Black Panther, the first one,
mm-hmm.
And probably Iron Man 1 and 2.
Classics, yeah.
Yeah, so this is the classics.
Okay. Next one, South Park.
5.
Okay.
So I've liked South Park, but I never was like into South Park.
Got sucked into it. Okay.
Yeah, like I'll watch it if it's on and laugh, but like I'm not like, oh, I gotta tune into South Park.
Right. Led Zeppelin.
0.
Okay. Not a fan, eh?
But that's not my kind of music, you know.
What do you listen to?
I do listen. I listen to a lot of things. I don't really have a specific probably taste in music, but I'd say probably the music I listen to the most is like kind of like alternative, maybe like also rap, hip hop kind of stuff. Yeah. So.
Okay, last one. Camping.
10.
Okay, you're a camper.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah.
During COVID, I went camping a few times with some of my buddies just to be outside, you know.
Yeah.
And I used to live in Japan, and my family used to go camping a lot when we lived in Japan. So, yeah, I'm a big fan.
How's the camping in Japan?
I can't really say. I just remember living there. I remember going camping. So, like, I remember it being a good time.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Right. Family camping trip.
Yeah, we did a lot like on the beach and stuff there. So yeah, it was fun.
Very cool, man. Honestly, Taylor, we always love catching up with you, buddy. You've always been so generous with your time and we really appreciate it. And obviously we're rooting for you still, hoping for all the best here. I'm going to flip it over to Adam here. I know we got a couple listener questions for you before we let you go, but again, thanks so much, man.
Absolutely. Thank you guys. It's always a blast.
Okay. Before we get to the listener questions, we got to talk football.
Okay. Love it.
Yeah.
Always.
Gotta talk football. Can't have you on here in a Seahawks jersey and not talk football.
Yep.
First and foremost, I know all of your answers are going to be Seahawks are great, but let's talk realistically here. Tom Brady, is he going to win another Super Bowl this year with a sub 500 team?
Oh, I mean, it's just... I don't know. I'm not. The one thing that I've learned with Tom Brady is you never bet against him. You know, like you just, I mean, the guy, what, his under
7 rings
somehow found his way. The guy just doesn't die. Like he just won't go away. And, you know, and it's like he wins when you need him the most. And so it's like, I don't know. And I think there was a stat that came out that said that he was like, 7-0 against the Cowboys or something in the playoffs or something against like number one seeds or something like that. And it's just like the Cowboys are just kind of like they're a little bit of a question mark right now. And it's Tom Brady. And I feel like he's kind of, you know, kind of getting into that swing of things again. So I don't know.
This Buccaneers team is like not good, But also, I'm looking at this NFC, and it's like the quarterbacks that he's going to face on his way to the Super Bowl are not formidable. It's not Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers didn't make the playoffs. There isn't a quarterback that that scares me. Like, we got Jalen Hurts, we got Brock Purdy, we got Kirk Cousins, Dak Prescott with the Cowboys, Geno Smith there with the Seahawks, and Daniel Jones with the Giants. Like, I have nightmares of Tom Brady rolling through these soft quarterbacks. Meanwhile, all the good quarterbacks in the AFC beat up on each other for a month.
Yeah.
It feels inevitable.
I mean, I hope not. I mean, yeah. I mean, I love Tom Brady. I love that, like, his competitiveness. I love his fire. I love, you know, how great he's been. I don't think it's often that we all get to see somebody as great as he is, you know, in our lifetime. But
I knew there was a but. I was like, there's a but coming.
But it's just like, I want to know, like, when is it going to end? You know, when are we going to get off this train, man? Like, stop winning. Like, it's not, there's other guys out there that, you know, deserve to win as well. Like, just get off, go home.
Let the rest of us have a chance. It's like when you're playing slow pitch and you just have that one guy who's like all over the field settling under every fly ball. And it's like, let the rest of us play, Kevin Kiermaier. Anyways, sorry, we'll edit that out, I'm sure. All right. Tom Brady, probably done with the Buccaneers after this season. Rumors are already out. 49ers want him. The Dolphins want him. The Las Vegas Raiders want to get rid of Derek Carr so they can make room for Tom Brady. Crystal ball from Taylor Sesedo here. Where does Tom Brady win his next Super Bowl?
I had Tom Brady going to Miami. Only if Tua retires, which I think,
that's such a.
I think he should, because of the weapons that he has there. That's right up Tom Brady's alley. You got a young coach over there. You know, obviously seems like a offensive mastermind. You know, they have all the tools. Defense is pretty good. But I mean, if Devontae Adams is still over there in Vegas, it's going to be hard for Brady to probably say no to Vegas, because that kind of looks like his old teams where he has like Randy Moss, you know, the Wes Welkers kind of, you know, you got Devontae and you got, what's his name? Number 13, blanking on his name. You know what I'm talking about.
No, I'm blanking on it too. Scott, you're the football guy. Scott's like, I have no idea.
You know, but other than that, we know who we're talking about. But, you know, Darren Waller, all those guys. So, I mean, I think it's going to be
Hunter Renfro.
Hunter Renfro. There you go.
There we go. We got there.
So, I mean, I think it's going to be between those two. Yeah. But I think if Devontae goes wherever, I think he's going to go to Miami. So I think he said something about like he wanted to go over there and like, and then buy the team afterwards or something like that, or co-ownership. I don't know. Something like that.
So. All right. Enough Tom Brady talk. Let's move on to the listener questions. And good luck to your Seattle Seahawks in the postseason here. Okay. So first listener question then comes in from Mr. Krister, who wants to know, atmospheric differences between the Mets and the Jays. Now, obviously, you don't have an informed opinion on what the clubhouse and the dugout's like with the Mets as of yet. But just broadly speaking, do you have any insight into what the differences might be? Or is that a question we're going to have to revisit down the road once you go through a spring training with them and stuff like that?
Probably something we'll have to revisit. I've talked to some of the staff there, but that's about it. So like, I just think right now, I think the expectation is like World Series or bust. So I think kind of everybody's, again, with the word, I think everybody's bought in a little bit. So, that's all I know. I mean, I haven't really again, I haven't really spoke to too many people over there. So I know that in the Twitterverse world that Mets fans are expecting a lot. So
this is good.
Well, if there's anything we know about New York fans is that they're completely and totally reasonable. So
absolutely.
All right. Greatest place in the world to win, they say, right? Okay. Yep. Next one comes in from SPC. Wants to know, Sacedo, with moving around a lot when you were younger, did that have effect on your sporting growth? Thanks.
No, I don't think so. It honestly gave me the opportunity to see a lot of different talent out there. And I honestly kind of probably prepared me for the baseball lifestyle of like, you know, you don't know where you're going to go and you travel a lot. And so it just kind of made me more comfortable with all that stuff. So I think it honestly was, if anything, it was probably the best for my career.
Well, especially right now being the new kid at school, right?
You're used to it,
making friends. Yeah. Okay. Very good. Last one here comes in from Garth the Orgy. You've done a long toss with us in the past. Garth is on Long Toss with us a bunch, and he wants to know, he says, ask T-Sauce why he hasn't followed me back on Twitter yet. It's beginning to feel personal. It's personal, right?
It is personal.
It's personal. You don't have to answer that.
I want to issue an apology to Garth. I did not know that, one, he was following me, and two, that I did not follow him back. And I do that as soon as we get off the phone call here. So we could squash that beef.
Beef squashed. Yeah. All right. Honestly, Taylor, thank you so much, buddy. We wish you all the best in 2023 here. We're rooting for you, and we'll bug you down the road, and we'll catch up with you again.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. Thank you, guys.
All right, brother. All the best.
See ya.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack. With a new episode every Friday.
Oh! Osborne with a drive. Cheese and crackers. Shows to picture. Wrong move.
Thanks for listening.